Hello, and welcome to our press call. I'm Tom Pelton of the Environmental Integrity Project. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization based in Washington, D.C. and Austin, Texas, that is dedicated to enforcing environmental laws to protect public health. Today, we are releasing our new report, Coal's Poisonous Legacy, Groundwater Contaminated by Coal Ash Across the U.S. We researched and wrote this report with the assistance of Earth Justice, a leading environmental law organization that wields the power of the law and the strength of partnership to protect people's health. You can find the report at www.environmentalintegrity.org, and you can find an online map of all the coal ash sites at earthjustice.org/coalash/map. We will have six speakers today and then take questions from reporters. Our lineup of speakers today will be Abel Russ, senior attorney with the Environmental Integrity Project and lead author of the report, then Lisa Evans, senior counsel with Earth Justice. Next, Jason Peeler, an owner of the Peeler Ranch south of San Antonio, Texas. Next, we'll have Scott Banbury, conservation program coordinator for the Tennessee chapter of the Sierra Club. Next, Amy Brown, a resident of Belmont, North Carolina, who lives near the coal ash wait sites of the Duke Energy Allen Steam Station. And finally, we'll have Andrew Rain, water resources engineer with the Prairie Rivers Network in Illinois. So we'll start off with Abel Russ. His name is spelled A-B-E-L-R-U-S-S, senior attorney with the Environmental Integrity Project and the lead author of the report. Go ahead, Abel.
Thanks, Tom. Just a little bit of background about myself. I've been working on coal ash with the Environmental Integrity Project since 2010, and I work on federal litigation over EPA regulations, and I work on some site-specific litigation, and I've done a lot of research, like the kind of research that went into this report, in which we found that 91% of coal plants are contaminating groundwater with unsafe levels of coal ash pollutants, and most plants have unsafe levels of at least four different toxic pollutants. I'm going to very briefly cover some background, and then I'll turn to the results of the report. So coal ash is the solid waste that's left behind after coal is burned. It contains a long list of toxic elements, including arsenic and other cancer-causing chemicals, several neurotoxins, and several chemicals that are toxic to aquatic life. There are now billions of tons of coal ash buried in landfills and impoundments or ash ponds all across the country. And that might sound like hyperbole, but that's actually government and industry estimates of the volume. It is billions of tons. And it's become increasingly clear over the past few decades that all of this ash is a threat to groundwater. But the total scope of the problem is only becoming clear now. Last March, for the very first time, the coal industry had to publicly post groundwater monitoring data from wells installed near coal ash dumps and covering pollutants that are specific to coal ash. The database that we looked at includes 265 coal plants or, in a few cases, off-site ash disposal facilities, over 550 individual ash ponds and ash landfills, and over 4,600 monitoring wells. Roughly a quarter of U.S. coal plants are not in the database, either because they have no regulated coal ash dumps on site or because they were eligible for an extension. But our report includes all of the data that became available last year, and I believe it's representative of the industry as a whole. Processing all this data, we ended up with over 800,000 individual data points. It was a large undertaking. We had a great team of over a dozen volunteers, in addition to our own staff and contractors, working on this for several months. Earth Justice, Prairie Rivers Network, Sierra Club in particular were very helpful. And when it came time to analyze the data, we followed the general approach of the coal ash rule, the federal coal ash rule. We compared the levels of coal ash pollutants to background levels and to EPA drinking water standards. And if coal ash pollutants at a plant were greater than background and greater than EPA drinking water standards, we concluded that that plant was unsafe. So what did we find? First of all, we found that coal plants fall into three groups. The vast majority of them, 242 plants, or 91% of the industry, show unsafe levels of coal ash pollutants in groundwater, and the contamination appears to be coming from the regulated coal ash landfills and ponds at those sites. Another 12 plants show signs of coal ash contamination in groundwater, but we don't know exactly where it's coming from. It could be coming from the regulated ash dumps. It could be coming from older, unregulated ash dumps on the property. Or it could be coming from something else, and sometimes it's coming from all three. And that leaves a tiny sliver of the industry, 11 plants, where the groundwater meets drinking water standards. The results for each of these 265 plants are summarized in Appendix A of our report. Second, we've found that the problem usually involves many toxic pollutants, usually in combination. Most plants have unsafe levels of arsenic, which is both a carcinogen and a neurotoxin in their groundwater. Most plants also have unsafe levels of lithium. Roughly half of all coal plants have unsafe levels of boron, and the same is true of cobalt. But overall, the majority of coal plants have unsafe levels of at least four toxic pollutants, which means that there's a significant cumulative risk at these sites. And turning to the individual sites, we ranked them based on how unsafe their groundwater is, and the 10 worst sites are described in some detail in our report. The levels of contamination at these sites are off the charts. Two sites have arsenic levels that exceed 3,500 micrograms per liter, which is enough to cause cancer in one out of six people. These are the Newcastle Generating Station in Pennsylvania and Tennessee Valley Authority's Allen Fossil Plant outside of Memphis. The contaminated groundwater at the Allen plant is particularly troubling because that contaminated aquifer is connected to the deeper Memphis aquifer that the city uses for drinking water, which I think you'll hear more about later. At the San Miguel site outside of San Antonio, there are unsafe levels of 12 different pollutants, including beryllium and cadmium, which both exceed safe levels by over 120 times, and cobalt, which is 500 times higher than the drinking water standard. I also want to mention the Brandywine landfill in Maryland, which is close to our main office, and it holds ash from three different coal plants. The groundwater at that site has dangerous levels of arsenic, boron, cobalt, lithium, molybdenum, selenium, and others, and the contamination is flowing into local streams, which are now toxic to aquatic life. And the data for the Brandywine site only cover a portion of that site because most of the landfill is not regulated by the federal coal ash rule. We also looked at individual ash ponds and landfills. EPA originally thought that landfills would be less of a problem because they don't have all of the hydraulic pressure from the impounded water that an impoundment has. But we found that landfills are actually a big problem. 76% of them have unsafe levels of coal ash pollutants in the groundwater. It is true, however, that ponds are worse, and 92% of ash ponds have unsafe levels of contamination. Now, I want to point out that we're understating the true scope of the problem in several ways that are detailed in the report. But one big example is that the coal ash rule only applies to landfills that were active as of 2015, and the same is generally true of ash ponds. So any coal ash dumps that closed before 2015 are not regulated, they're not monitored, and we don't know much about them. And this presents two problems. First of all, these older ash dumps frequently contaminate the background wells at the site that are supposed to be measuring background water quality. And if that happens, it's much harder to statistically demonstrate whether one of the regulated ash ponds is leaking. But the bigger problem is that the cleanup requirements of the coal ash rule don't apply to these unregulated sites. So if you have a site with contaminated groundwater and you're only cleaning up half of the coal ash dumps at that site, you can imagine you're not really going to do anything to restore groundwater quality, and that's a big problem. One other caveat I want to briefly mention is that our report, like the coal ash rule, evaluates contamination by looking at drinking water standards, but this doesn't really tell you anything about some of the other risks, which are equally troubling, like risks to aquatic life and human health to people who eat fish for some of those pollutants that are bioaccumulative, like mercury and selenium. I should wrap up, but before I do, I just want to mention that some folks might have questions about new data because most coal plants will be posting their second annual monitoring reports today if they haven't already. And the data in our report come from the first annual reports, which were posted last March. There are a couple of reasons why our data are current, but most importantly, the first annual groundwater reports were unique in their scope with much more data than subsequent reports will have. They include what's called baseline monitoring, which means 8 rounds of sampling for all 21 pollutants in the rule. But subsequent reports, the ones that are released today, will only include 2 rounds of sampling for the 7 detection monitoring pollutants, and in some cases, 2 rounds of sampling for the rest of the pollutants, but not in all cases. So the first annual reports and our report provide a unique, nationally comprehensive snapshot of the industry, and it confirms that virtually all coal plants are poisoned groundwater. And I'll stop there. Thanks, and I look forward to your questions.
Thank you. That was Abel Russ, A-B-E-L-R-U-S-S, Senior Attorney with the Environmental Integrity Project and lead author of the report. Next, we're going to have Lisa Evans, Senior Counsel with Earth Justice. Her name is spelled L-I-S-A-E-V-A-N-S. Go ahead, Lisa.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you to everybody joining today. Just a little background on me. I previously worked as an attorney for the U.S. EPA focusing on hazardous waste cleanup. Since 2000, I've been working on coal ash issues. I feel that today's report marks a watershed event. Over the past 19 years, I've traveled across the country and seen firsthand how coal ash has wreaked havoc on families and communities. In Indiana, I've seen arsenic in tap water 100 times the federal standard, and an entire town that's a Superfund site due to coal ash dumping. In New Mexico, I've been caught in a dust storm of ash so thick I could barely open my eyes. I have visited the backyards of the very poor where utilities carelessly dumped coal ash, on the Moapa Reservation in Nevada, and on trailer homes in Uniontown, Alabama. Donald Trump would never live next to coal ash, yet he's been pushing coal plants to burn more and more coal, while at the same time gutting protections from the toxic waste that poisons our neighbors. For over a decade, Earth Justice and EIP have fought in the courts for protection from coal ash pollution. Coal is not only the worst energy source for its contribution to climate change, it also creates toxic waste that remains hazardous to health and the environment forever. Today's report demonstrates that we face a water crisis nationwide, caused by coal ash and perpetuated by the Trump administration. First, this crisis is caused by the gross mismanagement of one of the largest toxic waste streams produced by American industry. U.S. coal plants generate about 110 million tons a year. That's enough ash to fill train cars stretching from New York City to Melbourne, Australia. But as Abel indicated, that's the tip of the iceberg. Industry admits that there is about 3 billion tons of coal ash buried in the U.S. This is enough ash, it's stacked in one-ton cubes to reach the moon seven times over. There are approximately 1,400 coal ash ponds, landfills, and other dump sites. Our report covers 275 plants and about 550 disposal sites. So you can see that we have underestimated the pollution that is coming from these sites. Second, industry has dumped these billions of tons of ash in the cheapest way possible. Specifically, 95% of all coal ash ponds were constructed without a liner. Thus, the hazardous chemicals in coal ash flow directly into our groundwater. Third, this is a crisis because coal ash is poisoning an invaluable and irreplaceable resource. Groundwater is the drinking water for about 115 million people, more than one-third of the U.S. In rural areas, more than one-third of the U.S., rely on groundwater for drinking water. In rural areas, most households rely on such groundwater. And even if this water is not now used for drinking, contaminated groundwater flows to lakes and streams and can contaminate these waters, making them unsafe for fishing, recreation, and irrigation. So what is the Trump administration doing about this crisis? Quite simply, EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler is ignoring the problem and actually weakening federal protections, as demanded by the coal and utility industries. Wheeler, a former coal lobbyist, is doing the dirty bidding of industry and is making a terrible situation much worse. Last spring, in response to industry demands, Wheeler proposed a sweeping rollback of the 2015 coal ash rule that would gut water protections and cleanup standards. This is hardly a surprise, as Wheeler, as late as 2017, lobbied on behalf of Murray Energy to entirely eliminate the 2015 coal ash rule. Last July, in fact, Wheeler's first rulemaking was a regulation weakening the federal coal ash rule by, among other things, delaying the closure of leaking unlined ponds and ponds sitting in groundwater. His new rule encourages utilities to continue dumping ash into leaking pits, despite the fact that EPA knows that they are grossly contaminating water. Further, EPA says it will publish additional rules this year that will significantly weaken more of our federal protections. By doing so, the Trump administration is violating the law. Last August, the D.C. Court of Appeals ruled that EPA must strengthen, not weaken, the coal ash rule to provide greater health and environmental protection. Yet the Trump administration is moving fast in the opposite direction, deliberately ignoring both the law and the damage coal ash is causing to public health. We sued EPA over its latest rollback, and we will continue to take EPA to court for its illegal acts. What do we recommend as a solution? We suggest the following six actions to be taken immediately. One, regulators must expand their rules to regulate all coal ash dumps. Contamination is currently flowing from everywhere coal ash has been dumped. EPA's 2015 rule regulates only a portion. The DC Court of Appeals has ordered EPA to address about 100 unregulated legacy ponds currently oozing toxins into our water. EPA must immediately start there. Second, regulators must require all ash dumps be removed from groundwater. Leaving toxic ash in groundwater is a recipe for disaster that will poison aquifers, streams, and lakes for generations. If EPA won't do this, states can and must. In fact, the Virginia legislature did just that and passed a bill that requires ash be removed from groundwater and disposed away from Virginia waterways. It can be done. Third, regulators must require immediate testing of all residential wells near coal ash dumps. Testing is the only way to determine whether the water is safe. Fourth, regulators must pay immediate attention to contamination impacting minority and low-income communities. These fence line communities are the most vulnerable and the least able to afford water testing and legal assistance. Fifth, regulators must address the cumulative impact of exposure to multiple pollutants. Our report shows that groundwater often has unsafe levels of four or more toxic chemicals. Such exposure greatly elevates the risk of cancer, neurological damage, and ecological damage. And finally, regulators must actively assist communities where groundwater is contaminated and cleanups are required. There are at least 89 plants in 25 states and Puerto Rico where utilities must immediately design groundwater cleanups. Regulatory officials must ensure that these cleanups are timely and effective. Unfortunately, EPA is doing none of the above. We made critical data available today as the first step toward empowerment of impacted communities. When people understand the damage occurring and the law that prohibits such damage, industry and rogue agencies will not get away with continuing to harm our health and water. To end this crisis, Earth Justice will continue to fight in the courts to hold EPA responsible for protecting our health and to hold industry accountable for cleaning up the mammoth mess they made. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Lisa Evans, E-V-A-N-S, Senior Counsel with Earth Justice. Our next speaker is Jason Peeler, an owner of the Peeler Ranch south of San Antonio, whose property has been impacted by coal ash pollution. Go ahead, Jason.
Thank you, Tom. My name is Jason Peeler. My family has owned property about an hour south of San Antonio for over 100 years. For five generations, we've worked really hard at raising cattle and managing our natural resources to improve the rangeland and wildlife habitats. And in 1975, my parents sold about 350 acres in the middle of the ranch to San Miguel Electric Co-op to build a power plant, which started operation in the early 1980s. My parents believed the plant would be good for the local community, providing taxes and jobs and needed electricity in rural areas. In addition, about 4,000 acres of the Peeler Ranch have been mined for lignite coal from 1980 to 2004, which was burned at the San Miguel power plant. At the plant, there are three coal ash ponds and a landfill where fly ash, bottom ash, and scrubber blowdown are stored before disposal in the old mine areas that are also on our ranch. The ash ponds are over 40 years old and little more than giant holes in the ground. Over time, the ponds have leaked, and we are seeing impacts outside the plant fence line on our property. We believe the contamination from the ash ponds is killing our soil, contaminating our groundwater, and we are seeing vegetation death in our pastures and kills in our fish kills in our ponds. Since the leaks and seeps appear to run into the La Perita Creek system, we are worried that the contamination may eventually run into the Atascosa River and the larger Nueces River, which are drinking water sources for several small towns in a major metropolitan area, Corpus Christi. On a routine basis, trucks haul the coal ash from the plant to the mine, where the coal ash is dumped into fractured mine pits, with piles extending hundreds of feet into the air from ground elevation. The pits are open to the elements, so wind can blow the coal ash onto adjacent land, and rain can infiltrate the coal ash. As we understand it, San Miguel hauls nearly 2 million tons of coal ash from the plant to the old mines for disposal every year. Unfortunately, we're just learning about the impacts of coal, the impacts coal ash has had on our ranch. It's happened little by little over time, and we didn't see what was happening underground. It's hard to know when there's arsenic and selenium in your water. Now that we are fighting to get San Miguel to clean up the mess they have made, San Miguel has responded by using their power of eminent domain to condemn our land. Instead of cleaning up like they promised, San Miguel is trying to just take 7,300 acres of what my family has built over five generations. The prospect of losing our ranch is like losing a family member. There are bigger conversations that need to be had about how we generate electricity and safely handle their byproducts. But for our family, this is about right and wrong. We want our ranch restored to the way it was before, just like San Miguel repeatedly promised my parents. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. That was Jason Peeler, J-A-S-O-N-P-E-E-L-E-R, an owner of the Peeler Ranch south of San Antonio, Texas. Next, we're going to have Scott Banbury, Conservation Program Coordinator for the Tennessee Chapter of the Sierra Club. His name is spelled S-C-O-T-T-B-A-N-B-U-R-Y. Go ahead, Scott.
All right, thanks. I'm Scott Banbury with the Tennessee Chapter of the Sierra Club. I'm also our registered state lobbyist and have been working on these coal ash issues since roughly 2008. In 2014, Tennessee Valley Authority had to comply with a 2012 Clean Air Act consent decree to either put scrubbers on their plant here in Memphis or convert it to natural gas. They chose to convert it to natural gas and stated that they would use gray water from our local sewage treatment plant to cool their new gas plant. They changed their mind in 2016, or at least that's when we found out about it, and decided they wanted to dig five wells into our artesian aquifer, the Memphis Sand Aquifer here in Memphis, the source of all of our drinking water. TVA chose not to put out the supplemental environmental assessment supporting that decision to the public for comment, and even though the USGS, who conducted a small review study to support their decision and their finding of no significant impact, that study said it is beyond our scope to be able to determine whether or not there may be threats to the aquifer through absence of protective clay thought to exist in the area. When Sierra Club found out about this, we filed the first ever appeal of industrial well permits in Shelby County. We have our local health department has authority over well permits. And in the arguments we made, we pointed specifically to the fact that the coal ash ponds were within several thousand feet of where the new industrial wells would be located, that there was compelling United States Geological Survey science and science from our University of Memphis's groundwater program that there may be an absence of the protective clay layer in that area, and it might lead to contaminants from the coal ash pond getting into our drinking water. We actually cited EIP reports back then that had found that some reports given by the TVA to the Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation indicated even back in 2008 that there was leakage occurring into the local groundwater. Subsequently, our appeal was denied. TVA failed to disclose, and there was no discovery process. They failed to disclose results they already had in hand that were published in 2017. This appeal was in 2016, late 2016. Reports that they put up as a result of the coal combustion residuals rule showed that there was massive levels of arsenic leaking out of their ponds, 350 times the maximum contaminant levels. The state of Tennessee immediately stepped in and said, whoa, you need to slow down on the use of those wells, put them on hold, ordered a remedial investigation. The remedial investigation resulted in a study by the U.S. Geological Survey in July 2018 that turned on all of TVA's wells and then looked for groundwater movement and monitoring wells that were installed around the TVA site, but also existing monitoring wells up to 2 miles away. And there was an almost instantaneous indication that groundwater was moving towards the Allen plant when they turned all their wells on. PDEC has since not allowed them to use their wells. Our local health department, just this January, in reissuing their annual well permits, put restrictions on those wells so they can only be used for further investigation work. What we're finding is that TVA knew about these things and did not disclose them to the public when they knew about them, but only when required by law disclose them. Since then, TVA has now changed their mind. They originally wanted to close these ponds in place by throwing dirt on top of them and claim that there was no threat, even though the pits are unlined and there's hydrologic connectivity in the groundwater, shallow aquifer. They've now changed their mind, and they've started an environmental impact statement process to determine the best method of disposal, which their preferred alternative is removal and reinterment in a Class 1 landfill or beneficial reuse. The story got a little bit thicker this last Friday when TVA posted its 2018 groundwater monitoring report required under the coal combustion residuals rule, and in that report made the statement, quote, based on deep exploratory drilling in the vicinity of ALF 202, which is a monitoring well very close to the monitoring well that showed the very high levels of arsenic, the upper clayborne confining unit, which is the clay that protects our aquifer, is absent, and the alluvial aquifer directly overlies the Memphis sand. So the, you know, kind of big picture here is that arsenic is leaking into our groundwater. The groundwater is connected to our deeper drinking water aquifer, and had TVA reached out to the public when they made their decision to drill these wells, these problems would have been identified, and we would have had, you know, at least a 4-year head start on moving forward with the cleanup process.
Thanks very much, Scott. That was Scott Banbury, Conservation Program Coordinator for the Tennessee Chapter of the Sierra Club. His name is spelled Scott Banbury. Our next speaker will be Amy Brown, a resident of Belmont, North Carolina, who lives near the coal ash waste site of the Duke Energy Allen Steam Station. Go ahead, Amy.
Thank you so much. My name is Amy Brown. I live in Belmont, North Carolina. And I want to first just let you all know that I'm not an expert. I'm not an epidemiologist, a toxicologist. I did not go to school and get a degree in any of water toxicity and whatsoever, any science. But what I am is a wife and a mother that lives in an area that has unlined leaking coal ash pits sitting in the ground right behind my neighborhood. And a little background, everything was good. No one was concerned. We didn't have any reason to be concerned until the Dan River spill happened in 2014, where 39,000 tons of coal, Duke Energy site, one of their coal ash pits, the pipe burst and this ash went into the Dan River. Well, after that, the state wanted to take a little bit of a closer look as to their other facilities throughout the state of North Carolina. There's 14 total, and they wanted to test well water to see if there was anything that could be concerning next to their facilities. I received a letter offering to have my well water tested for free. I responded, just like my neighbors and others across the state. I got the results in April 2015 and from the state, and there was a letter in there that advised me not to use my water for drinking or cooking. So from that point, 2015, for 3.5 years, my family, along with almost 1,000 other households throughout the whole state, were relying on bottled water that Duke Energy was providing us. So a big box truck would pull up in front of our home and deliver this water to us every 2 weeks. We lived that way until eventually we were hooked up to city water. Now, being hooked up to city water, yes, that got us off of the relying on bottled water, but it didn't take care of all the problems because these man-made holes that contain heavy metals known to cause cancer still sit behind my neighborhood. And while the company seeks to cap in place and not have to fully clean them up, we, the neighbors, keep fighting. So even though I'm hooked up to city water, the nightmare has not ended. You know, we have, you know, become educated. While I may not be an expert in epidemiology, toxicology, I may not hold those titles, I can assure you that I am very educated when it comes to corruption, understanding what it means to have to fight when I really, really believe that these people were doing their job. You know, I had no reason not to trust these people who hold a job, who get paid to protect people. See, you don't even know that you needed protection until you've had to fight for it. But once you've had to fight for it, you can never trust like you once did. And so we continue to fight here in North Carolina. You know, there was right here, particularly in Belmont, there was almost 300 households that were relying on bottled water, the largest affected area throughout the whole state. And yet we're still wondering, are they going to allow them to keep these pits in the ground while we wait for the state to make a final decision? And Duke continues to seek the cheapest way by putting a top on these pits. It doesn't solve the problem that they will continue to leak underneath their own lines. You know, it's just, we may not have known better 30, 40 years ago, but we know better today. And it's just like I tell my children, once you know better, it is your job to do better. And we most certainly all know better today. With this report coming out, we just cannot allow the unacceptable any longer. The EPA is doing nothing, nothing. They're causing more harm than good. How are you doing your job? How is that offering me protection by giving less protection, by eliminating things? We need to be adding to what we had in place. We need to be adding to that because we have more knowledge now. If we have more knowledge, we really need to do better, all of us. So I will end this by saying disasters will happen, but it is your reaction to the disaster that will ultimately tell the story, and we all need to be more responsible. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That was Amy Brown, AMYBROWN, resident of Belmont, North Carolina, who lives near the coal ash waste dump of the Duke Energy Allen Steam Station. Finally, we have Andrew Rain, water resources engineer with the Prairie Rivers Network in Illinois. His name is spelled A-N-D-R-E-W-R-E-H-N. Andrew Rain. Go ahead, Andrew.
Thanks, Tom. And thanks to everybody else sharing their stories. My name is Andrew Rain. I'm a water resources engineer at Prairie Rivers Network. Prairie Rivers Network is an Illinois nonprofit that works to protect water, heal land, and inspire change. I've been working on coal ash for the past 3 years, and Illinois is one of the states with the most number of coal-fired power plants in the country, 17 open power plants and 8 closed power plants. Using data contained in this report and additional data at some of those closed sites that was not included in the data set that came out, Prairie Rivers Network, along with Environmental Integrity Project, Earth Justice, and Sierra Club, identified that contamination above safe drinking water levels existed at 22 of those 25 sites. And so coal ash is impacting the groundwater across our entire state, and we've seen unsafe levels of groundwater at sites along Lake Michigan, the Illinois River, Lake Springfield, the Mississippi River, and many others. And perhaps the most alarming is the coal ash that is next to the Middle Fork of the Vermilion River, which is in east central Illinois, and there coal ash leachate is visibly seeping into the river, which happens to be Illinois' only national scenic river. The riverbank is stained orange and oily, and it's always seeping this leachate from coal ash into the river. So, and while that's happening, the river is meandering and is on a collision course with the coal ash. So it's cutting away that riverbank that's separating the coal ash from the river itself, and it's threatening another major coal ash spill. Yet the owner, Dynegy or Vistra, seeks to gain approval to leave this coal ash here permanently next to the river, leaking coal, leaking into the Middle Fork. So, and really across the state, each site has its own problems. But like many states, Illinois is quickly reaching decision points on coal ash. These companies have to start applying for closure plans, and a lot of them, almost all of them, want to leave their coal ash in place. And so Illinois EPA, our EPA, has already started approving these plans that are going to leave groundwater and leaking pits in the floodplains of rivers forever. So this year, Prairie Rivers Network and a group of allies in Illinois are calling for a stronger set of state rules to ensure that coal ash is closed correctly the first time, meaning moved to a safe location, and that messes aren't left behind for taxpayers to clean up. Thanks for your time.
All right, thanks very much. That was Andrew Rehn, R-E-H-N, Water Resources Engineer, with the Prairie Rivers Network in Illinois. Next, we're going to take a question and answer session from reporters. Carla, tell the journalists how they can ask a question.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that will be star 1 if you would like to ask a question. And we do have a question from the line of David Loroff with WGN News. Your line is live.
Go ahead, David.
Just to correct the record there, I'm with Inside EPA. But my question is going back to the list that Lisa gave about what EPA or states need to do to sort of correct the problems that you identified in the report. I'm curious about how much of that you see as possible or plausible with the rule that's now tied up at the D.C. Circuit. And EPA has said they want to go back and take another look at it, but nobody seems to know exactly when or how.
Lisa Evans, you want to answer that?
Sure. Hi, David. Well, anything is possible in terms of what EPA might put in that rule that's been required by the court. They have to specifically include in that rule both the a deadline to close unlined impoundments, as well as a plan to address what I call legacy ponds, which are those ponds that are at retired coal plants. So that was what was specifically in the court order. Faced with all of the evidence that we're presenting today, and I think that Amy said it well, is that EPA can do better. They are faced with evidence of gross contamination at nearly all the coal plants. So if EPA is going into a rulemaking, if it cares about protecting human health and the environment, it will address some of these other recommendations, such as requiring residential well testing, attention to environmental justice communities, prohibiting disclosure of ash in groundwater, et cetera. So, you know, will the EPA do it? I'm sure it won't, but they could and they should.
That was Lisa Evans, Senior Counsel with Earth Justice. Does that answer your question, David?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
All right, next question.
Your next question comes from the line of Jamie Satterfield with TN News Satterfield.
Go ahead, Jamie.
Hey, yeah, I've got a question. I represent the Knoxville News Sentinel in Tennessee, and I'm not asking about Memphis. I'm asking in particular about Kingston and the Bull Run plant. Your study found what I had reported a couple of months ago, that there's arsenic and lithium increased levels in the groundwater test wells. TVA is now saying in their latest report that they have conducted an alternate source demonstration. And so at both Kingston and Bull Run, they now insist that it's not the current landfills that are leaking, that this is old contaminant or, you know, it's got other sources other than the new landfill. My immediate question is there any way at all, isn't this the fox guarding the hen house? Am I supposed, or is the public supposed to trust the energy companies when this rule allows them to use this alternate source demonstration? Have you all looked at that at all?
Abel Russ of the Environmental Integrity Project, you want to take that one?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, we've looked at it quite a bit. We've seen a lot of this, and I know the TVA sites well. And at both of those plants, the contamination is coming from on-site coal ash. And what they're trying to say is it's not the regulated units. We don't know what it is, but of course they know what it is. It's the older unregulated ash units that are sitting right next to the newer regulated units. And it's a problem with the rule itself. TVA is not complying with the rule in every respect, but they are generally allowed to do that, and that's one of the biggest problems we have with how EPA chose to regulate this. And that's why we're asking the states to step up and be a little bit more aggressive and look at each power plant where there's groundwater contamination and require the owners to identify all of the ash deposits at the site and do something about all of them. And I believe the Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation is doing a little more than what the coal ash rule requires, although I'm not up to speed on exactly what they're doing. But I know that the state is aware of the older coal ash disposal units at those sites.
And simply to say that it's the source is older coal ash, does that make me feel any safer in terms of my groundwater?
It certainly shouldn't. I don't think it should. And you've hit the nail on the head. That's the biggest problem. And if they clean up the newer regulated sites, they're still going to have groundwater contamination at those plants because it is coming from other units.
If I can, Abel.
One question, if I may. I noticed in your report that you all advocate high and dry stack coal ash storage. So I wanted to ask you, though, about the dangers in that. You know, we have a case involving the Kingston plant where workers were poisoned by long-term exposure to coal ash, in particular the dust. So I'm wondering why you all are advocating. I get that you don't want it in water, but is dry storage any safer? Doesn't it create another sort of layer of contamination problems in the air?
I think it can, but it generally, you know, in the big picture, it's much safer because there are ways to apply moisture to ash that you're handling dry during the process of moving it around and putting the landfills in place that minimize the amount of dust exposure and that are, you know, totally consistent with the rule, and we don't have a problem with that. We're not asking for everything to be bone dry all the time, but the point we're trying to make with this high and dry kind of recommendation is that storing the coal ash or burying it and leaving it there when it's sitting in groundwater is a terrible idea. And the thing to do is to make sure the coal ash dump is elevated above the water table by at least 5 feet, which is what the rule requires for new and existing ash dumps, and is capped so that no infiltration of precipitation is happening, so that the ash, once it's in place, stays dry. When you're building the landfill, of course, there are all kinds of things you want to do to ensure that the dust isn't blowing off-site.
All right. We're going to move on to our next question, if that's okay. We have a lot of callers on the line. Go ahead, next question.
Your next question comes from the line of Dwayne Smoot with Muskogee Phoenix. Your line is live.
Well, I was wanting to get some clarification on what might be considered lined and unlined, because on your map it shows a particular unit at the OG&E unit as an unlined, but they're closing documents indicate it's lined. And then also, I was wondering, you mentioned the problems with, you know, no monitoring data for groundwater on these sites that are being closed down. And I was wondering if there's any word that those sites being monitored prior to closure, and if so, is there any indication of any of that data where that might be available for these sites?
Which site exactly is that? Which site exactly is that again?
OG&E plant in Muskogee, Oklahoma.
In Oklahoma, okay.
Generating plant, yes.
Lisa Evans, you want to try to tackle? Go ahead, Abel Russ, go ahead.
Yeah, so regarding your first question, there's a difference between the word lined means one thing in the colloquial sense, and then there's a specific legal definition under the coal ash rule, and a lot of owners will say that their units are lined because they have some kind of a liner. But if it's not the liner that meets EPA liner design criteria, we consider it to be unlined. And so according to EPA's coal ash rule, the liner has to have 2 feet of compacted clay with a certain hydraulic conductivity and a plastic liner on top of that. Anything less is technically, under the rule and after the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals opinion last year, unlined. And so that's why we would call that one unlined. And with regard to older data, other data, EIP has a website called ashtracker.org where we've been accumulating groundwater monitoring data for sites across the country. It's not comprehensive. We haven't been able to get every coal plant in the country up on there. And prior to the coal ash rule, a lot of coal plants simply didn't have any groundwater monitoring data at all. So there are a lot of gaps in that database. But to the extent that we were able to do so, we collected all of the groundwater monitoring data that were generated pursuant to state law in the time period of roughly 2010 to 2015. And so I don't believe that that particular power plant is on AshTracker, although I may be mistaken. But we do have, for a lot of these sites, older data that sometimes cover some of the older unregulated ash dumps that you're talking about.
Okay. And so they and you're right. I mean, what they describe as a liner is 6 inches of soil, local soil on site with the 42% bentonite. It doesn't talk about any plastic or anything like that. And they're removing it, but they talk about rills in the soil. So, I mean, there's still possible that, you know, there's a whole lot. And it was an emergency site, but there's still a lot there. So it could be seeping into the groundwater today as we speak. And it's sitting right on the edge of it's in a floodplain. And we're in Oklahoma, which the state has taken over, and I noticed in your report there doesn't seem to be any sign of the EPA or the states doing any enforcement or regulation. Have you looked into what Oklahoma has done since it got that waiver, and has there been any indication of any enforcement anywhere in Oklahoma that you've seen, or if you've studied that at all?
Abel Russ?
I personally can't speak to that. I don't know. Lisa, maybe you can.
We are not aware of any actions the state has taken to enforce. Same as there are certainly no EPA enforcement actions forthcoming.
All right. Let's go on to our next question.
Your next question comes from the line of Alex Rozier with Mississippi Today. Your line is live.
Go ahead, Alex.
Hey, I just had a quick two-part question just about the standards, the safe levels that you guys use in their ports. I'm just curious if those are from the EPA themselves, and are those standards do they come from the 2015 the coal ash rule, or those exist before?
Abel Russ of EIP, you want to take a stab at that?
Yeah, they're almost all the same as the groundwater protection standards and the coal ash rule, and those standards in turn are almost all taken from Safe Drinking Water Act primary national drinking water regulation, usually maximum contaminant levels. For lead, it's an action level, but it's basically the same thing. Then the EPA standards for cobalt, molybdenum, lithium, those are based on EPA regional screening levels, which are also a drinking water standard that's used in the Superfund program. For three of the chemicals, we are using something else. So for boron and sulfate, which don't have groundwater protection standards under the rule, we used EPA drinking water advisories, which are another kind of drinking water standard that EPA derives. And then for molybdenum, We used a slightly different number. The coal ash rule uses 100 micrograms per liter, which is derived from a regional screening level. We use 40 micrograms per liter, which is from an EPA drinking water advisory. They're both EPA drinking water numbers, and I think they're, I used to be a toxicologist, I think they're equally valid. It's just that we chose the stricter one to be a little bit more health protective.
Sorry, can you repeat the last one you said?
Molybdenum.
Molybdenum, okay. Great, thank you so much.
Okay, that was Abel Russ of EIP answering that question. Okay, next question.
Your next question comes from the line of Jacob Finston with WAMU. Your line is live.
Go ahead, Jacob.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to know if you could, if one of you could talk a little bit more about the Brandywine site in Maryland. If you have any more detail, you could speak about that.
Sure. Abel Russ of Environmental Integrity Project, talk about that Brandywine site.
Yeah, sure. So the interesting thing about Brandywine, to me, is that it's only partially regulated by the coal ash rule. So they have some groundwater wells around the newer part of the landfill, but most of the landfill, the older part, they treat as a separate, unregulated unit. And so we don't have the same level of detail for that side of the landfill, at least under the coal ash rule, but we do have a lot of data for that site otherwise. So from state law monitoring, and there's a consent decree that the owner entered into with the state of Maryland that Environmental Integrity Project was involved in many years ago, and we continue to monitor. So they've done a lot of work evaluating the area, and they know, for example, that there's contamination getting into the geological layer that's supposed to protect the deeper drinking water aquifer. Similar to what we're talking about with the Allen plant in Tennessee, the groundwater, the shallow groundwater is definitely contaminated, and a lot of people had this assumption that it wouldn't get into the deeper aquifer that people use for drinking water because there's an aquitard, there's a layer of low permeability soil that the water can't get through. But the contamination is now in that aquitard, and so it eventually will pass through it into the drinking water aquifer. Meanwhile, most of that groundwater is pouring into the local streams where in-stream toxicity testing of various kinds has shown that the streams are now toxic with unsafe levels of multiple coal ash pollutants. And so that site's a real mess. And, you know, the question is what you do with a place like that. And I think the only answer really is to invest the resources that are necessary to re-engineer that site and dig some of that coal ash up and move it into a place where it can be more safely stored.
Yeah, and can you hear me still?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sorry. So I also was just sort of looking at the map as you were talking and trying to figure out exactly like what waterways were nearby there. But so it sounds like there are creeks nearby that where surface contamination is affecting them.
Yeah, there are a couple of creeks, and they're monitoring all of them. There's a lot of monitoring going on at that site, and it shows that there are a lot of ongoing and unremediated seeps and leaks and other kinds of things happening. So that site is definitely an ongoing problem.
Okay, thanks.
And, of course, Abel, that's right, 19 miles southeast of where we are here in D.C. What type of pollutants in particular and what type of health impacts do they have in that groundwater?
Well, if people were to be drinking it, they would, and right now they're not, but they might someday, and there are quite a few. I'm just going to flip to that part of my report. So we identified unsafe levels of arsenic, which is a cancer-causing chemical and a neurotoxin, boron, which is toxic to human health and aquatic life. It causes developmental impacts in humans like low birth weight. It also causes things like testicular atrophy in lab studies. Cobalt, lithium. Lithium is present at very high concentrations at that site, and lithium is associated with a whole range of health effects, including neurotoxicity, molybdenum, which has been associated with gout-like symptoms and other health effects, is present at 100 times its safe level, and selenium, which is a problem for fish, in addition to being a problem for human health, because it causes fish toxicity at pretty low concentrations, fish deformities and other fish diseases.
And, of course, the streams from that Brandywine site flow towards the Patuxent River, I believe, which goes into Chesapeake Bay, right?
Yeah, eventually that water goes into, yep.
Okay, does that answer your question? Okay, let's go up the next question then.
There are no questions in queue at this time.
Excellent. Okay, well, everyone, thanks so much for participating. If you have any follow-up questions, you can reach me, Tom Pelton, of the Environmental Integrity Project at 202-888-2703, or by email at tpelton@environmentalintegrity.org. Thanks, everyone, for helping and participating, and have a great afternoon.
This concludes this afternoon's teleconference. You may now disconnect your lines.